Hi, welcome back to Ellie and Noakes Reviews. I'm Noakes.
I'm Ellie.
And today we will be discussing the Netflix film I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
Released 2016, so we will be having some spoilers, I do think.
Yeah. So we decided, just on a whim, because it's getting close to October, we should watch some spooky movies. So after about 45 minutes of trying to decide what to watch, we stumbled upon this film.
It's actually been in my review queue almost as long as it has been released. So it wasn't stumbled upon so much as what have we been thinking about watching and what should we actually watch? Why don't we get rid of something in our queue?
Ah, I did not know that.
Well, that's how it was for me. I'm sorry.
It's fine.
I'm so sorry.
We'll get into why Ellie is so sorry in a moment.
I'm very sorry.
So, jumping off of that.
I'm so sorry.
What did you think of this movie?
Well, it was artistically shot, and the cameras placed at very definite angles. The movie was so slow in trying to be a slow burn of tension that it lost all tension altogether. So it wasn't scary at all, in my opinion.
I was creeped out at some moments, but then again, I'm not a major horror person. Jump scares and stuff scare me, even in like non-horror films. But yeah, I agree. The same way. I started almost nodding off during this film. That's how slow it was.
Yeah. So let's put it this way. So it starts with black screen and voiceover of describing houses and how if people die there, then it's owned by the people who died there and the ghosts that remain, in a very kind of slow, meditative sort of tone, and then you jump to the actual visuals, so there's actual visuals now. Then the main actress comes onto the screen and voiceover telling you who this is, how old she is, how she's not going to live to her next birthday, what kind of person she is. Well, not actually very much. She has like no personality whatsoever. All while the actress is staring into the camera, smiling, with her smile just kind of slightly changing. So it's not even like a Stepford Wives sort of smile. It's just kind of like, how long do I have to keep holding this smile for, director? Is my voiceover part done yet? Did I record the voiceover before or after? Do we know exactly how long this voiceover is going to be? I still need to be smiling at the camera, right? Without showing my teeth. I'm not allowed to show my teeth for this smile. I can't actually look warm and inviting in this smile. I'm just going to keep smiling now. Is my smile done yet? Is it done yet? Please tell me I'm done smiling.
And that goes on for, I would say, roughly, what, 3.5 minutes?
It felt like 10.
Yeah. So I am a film major, and in my screenwriting class, mentioned as a big no-no was, don't do voiceover if you can help it, especially for exposition, because it's the same with novels. You show, you don't tell.
And there were so many places that they could have shown or, you know, told. I mean, even the characters telling each other. So this nurse, this hospice nurse, goes to take care of this supposedly dying author who has dementia and is senile. And so she's supposedly going. We only see the only care that we see the nurse give to the old woman is taking her back to her room after she had wandered out of bed late at night and brushing her hair at one time in order for the old lady to basically tell her that she will not be pretty and all pretty things grow old and ugly and disgusting. And when she is confusing the nurse for a character slash ghost from one of her novels. So that is basically the only interaction we get with those two. And I actually think that the film suffered because you then have this main character who has to carry the entire story, the entire 1.5 hour movies that felt like 4 hour movie by herself with nobody to interact with. And that could have helped to develop the strangeness of it, not to use the old woman as a horror prop, but it can be very sad and disconcerting with old people with dementia, and very human, and it could have been a human, if unsettling, aspect to the story that just was not there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Ellie said, this was slower than a slow burn. Like, it's, yeah, to the film's credit, it does have good visuals, but it is so slow. And I don't know much about hospice, but I'm under the impression that the times I've witnessed hospice being done, normally the hospice stuff is like maybe a month, maybe 3 months. This lady is a hospice nurse to this old woman by herself for over a year.
No, not quite a year, because we learn at the beginning that she is 28. She turned 28 3 days ago, and she would not reach her 29th birthday. Now, that was by voiceover. It had been 11 months, and the only reason we knew it was 11 months was also because of voiceover.
Yeah. Yeah. Too much voiceover in this. And it's just, I mean, I guess they're trying to, they didn't have her get swapped out with stuff because it's supposed to be kind of like she's isolated. It's an isolation story. She's in this old house by herself. And you know there's something along with a ghost because she's using an old-time cord phone, rotary phone, to, like, talk to her girlfriends or whatever. And you see the cord, like, being pulled back by something invisible.
Which, by the way, I totally would have felt it start to click. I've had one of those corded phones. So that goes to show how old I might be. But we had one, and you can feel it start to tug. It was tugging quite a bit. It was lifting and tugging. You feel that motion in your hand as you're talking on the phone. So, yeah, that's when the tension lost it for me. Oh. And we knew that something was going to happen beforehand because the visuals kept going back to the chair that she would be sitting in, but wasn't yet. So it'd be chair for like 30 seconds while she's talking on the phone. Her for like 15 seconds. Chair for another 30 seconds. Her 15 seconds. Chair for another 30 seconds. Her. And it's like we get the point. Something's going to happen when she sits in the chair. And so she sits down in the chair and then the cord starts rising and then it's pulled from her hands. And that was all in the trailer also, the phone getting pulled. So all of the scary stuff was actually shown in the trailer, too.
Yes,
so.
It was, which yeah. is very irritating when they do that. It's, yeah, I don't like it when movies do that. They put all their best scares in the trailer. And, yeah, this was just, like I mentioned, this movie was, I know we've said this before, but this is a slow film.
Uh-huh.
It's very slow, and like, and there's other things, like, I mean, I've seen enough horror movies that, like, there's one point where the main lady is looking at the television, she's getting nothing but static, and then she keeps flipping the television off, and then it, you know, she sees the reflection of the doorway behind her, and then, oh no, there's a woman in a white dress behind her, like, and then she looks around and there's nothing there. And then for some reason, when they, so the author lady writes these horror novels, and the character that this is based off of is based off of a book called The Woman in the Walls, or The Girl in the Walls, or something. So I was thinking this was going to be like it wasn't necessarily a ghost, but there actually was somebody living in the walls. Of course, that's not the case. The body was just buried in the walls. And so at one point, they do a flashback to the story. For some reason, this character, ghost lady, she's walking around her house blindfolded.
So what I think, so we learn about this through actually, some of it is dialogue between two characters. Instead of voiceover, we learn that the house was built, a fiancé had built this house for his bride-to-be, and then the couple vanish, and there's clicking of tongues and tisks, and the townsfolk just like, oh my goodness, why did they skip town? Oh, this is such a scandal. Let's not talk of this again. And so I took it as the fiancé is trying to surprise his bride. Look at this beautiful house that I showed you. So that's why she's entering it blindfolded. But then she remains blindfolded, feeling her way throughout the entire house. And she's got this little smile on her lips. She's so excited, but she's just feeling. And then at one point she pricks her finger and then she gets scared. And then, spoiler.
Blam! Sledgehammer to the face.
Yeah, but after she takes off her blindfold, looks at her fiancé, who has done nothing at this point and no background of any sort of anything that he would kill her for any sort of reason. I mean, if I was afraid of my fiancé, I wouldn't be walking around a house blindfolded.
Or doing a podcast with him.
Yeah. So she looks at him. She gets almost scared, sad, like she's starting to tremble. And then he brings out the sledgehammer from behind his back and sledgehammers her. Yeah. That's who the ghost is this killed
woman.
This killed bride-to-be. She's been whispering her story to the author. The old lady. When she was a young lady, she whispered to her, but didn't tell her the ending because she couldn't remember it. But we, as an audience, get to see it no problem. There's no reveal. There's no searching for it. There's no mystery about it. We're just shown it. So that's another flaw. It's a weird movie. And you could find it beautiful, but it's like, it would have been so much better as a short film, like no longer than an hour. And it was an hour and a half, and it felt forever. Like, I honestly thought that it was adapted from a short story, but it turns out that it was an original story by the director. So maybe they had been trying to get it into a film, a publication, like a magazine or whatnot, and couldn't. I don't know. I don't know the background. But that's just, it feels like it should have been a short story in a gothic horror magazine to me.
But since it's not a short story, here's how I would have changed what was going on. Number one, cut out the voiceover. Have it done with dialogue.
And visuals.
Have more jumps. You can have a slow building, slow burn tension movie, but speed it up a little bit. Like, build it up. Like, have some more revelations of, you know, stuff. The hospice nurse finding out things, and maybe have the nurse or the woman who's dying be in on it. Like, maybe she's part of some cult or something. I don't know. Like, make it more interesting.
Make it a little more tropey. Come on. It's interesting to me that this hospice nurse has been there almost an entire year. Number one, the TV doesn't work all the time. It's one of those old ones with antennas that you have to adjust. The time period of the film itself is not quite, we couldn't quite place it. It's definitely not modern day, but not really old. It's just like the clothing was so nondescript, you couldn't even place what the time period of the movie was. So the TV doesn't work. She didn't bring any, I didn't even see a suitcase or anything when she actually entered the house.
She didn't have one.
Oh yeah, it was just her in her white dress and yellow blouse, or yeah. Yellow sweater. So where she got the other clothes she wore during the movie, I don't know. So number one, two, she didn't bring any books. Number three, throughout that entire year, she refused to pick up any of the 13 novels that the author had written that are lining the walls. And
she's a scaredy cat, and she's a horror author.
Right? Yeah. And number four, like, yeah, she could have gone crazy in less than 11 months' time. I'm sorry. If she's just like that, and if she's on call 24/7, for 365 days of the year with no breaks, she would go crazy faster. You don't have to have the 11-month gap. And, yeah. Can't quite remember where I was going with this, but... Yeah.
So, one thing is kind of funny. So, at one point, she notices where we eventually find out where the dead body is buried in the wall. She notices mold, and so... She complains about it, and she's like, I don't want to have this issue with mold because it's bad for my client's health and also for my health. Then later on, she finds a moldy old box full of this ghost's, like, memoirs or whatever.
But she doesn't actually go through the box. She opens the first container inside the box, lifts two pages and puts it back very slowly, hand movements, I might add. The hand moving to the first page has got to take a minute, with voiceover in the background.
Yeah. But I just think it's funny, like, you were such a germaphobe at the beginning, but now your curiosity has gotten so much the better of you that you're like, oh, this box is covered in mold. Well, I'm too curious. I'm just going to figure out, I want to see what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm not even going to, like, read anything other than the first two pages.
And the mold, which is supposed to be this growing problem, and so much so that she starts to hallucinate that it's on her hands and arms and that she's getting blisters and pustules and all this
boils
other stuff.
And
boils
stuff.
And it only happens once.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even help. And... she thinks that the mold is from pipeworks coming down from the laundry room. And if, like, this house is old enough that when it was built and the women murdered and put in the walls, that there wouldn't have been pipework going from a laundry room down to the main line through that wall. So the plumbers would have had to open the wall and found the dead body. And
yeah.
So it's just like none of these things really make sense, and it's so slow, and there are artistic shots, but then they do the same shots over and over ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm.
And the weirdness, the unsettledness doesn't really pan out. There is one part where, like, the ghosts, they're almost made through, like, double exposure, like, in slightly different positions, so you can, it's kind of like a more realistic looking Picasso painting that's out of focus, so you can, like, the lady's facing forward but sideways at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one point where if I cared enough, I would go back to make sure I was correct about it, that she's walking forward and her lower half of the body is facing one direction but the upper half of her body is facing the opposite direction, so, like, her arms are clasped in front of her but her in front is in her behind. So that was a little weird, but that was only, like, last little bit of the movie. And the other times she was forward facing, up and, like, top half and bottom half. So there were things that were interesting, and it kind of played with the idea. So you might not know this, Nox, but I listen to too many ghost podcasts. But if you believe in hauntings... there are a few kinds, and two kinds. There's intelligent hauntings and residual hauntings. I think what they were getting at with some of the foreshadowing sort of weird images is a formation of a residual haunting when the nurse was scared. Right after she leaves the room, you focus in on this dark area, and then you see the silhouette of her holding the phone from the back, and instead of the woman in white, who was murdered and put in the walls. And then you've got the intelligent haunting of the woman in white, like whispering her story to the author and terrorizing but not terrorizing the nurse, because she's not really terrorizing the nurse, and that ending was stupid. Anyway,
things that don't go anywhere. I think three times during this movie, the nurse comes down in the morning and she notices the front entrance rug. The corner of it has been tilted up, so she kicks it down. This happens like three times in the movie, so I'm thinking, okay, maybe the nurse is going to die by tripping on the rug or falling down the stairs and hitting the rug. No. It's just there to unsettle the audience that, oh, something's going on, but that's it. And, yeah, speaking of that ending,
the nurse is scared to death.
Yeah, she's scared to death.
She sees the ghost once and then dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's not even scary, she's just standing there.
Well, they don't even show, like, they show, like, a 2-second flash, and then you just focus on the nurse's reaction. Mm-hmm. Because you saw the ghost following her in another room.
And that's when the upper half and lower half of her body seem to have been twisted.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah, so lady dies.
And then she becomes a ghost.
Yeah, she becomes a ghost. And then the house gets...
and then the old author dies because the lady is dead at the bottom of the stairs and obviously can't take care of her. So she dies and she becomes a young ghost. At least that's what I figured. Either that or somehow the nurse can travel through time as a ghost.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the house is a bunch of children or whatever. A family lives in the house.
The end.
The end. Because they mentioned how ghosts, when they die, if people die in the house, they don't give up the house. They can only let the living borrow it. Uh-huh. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Too much voiceover. Way too much voiceover. Too many repetitive artistic shots. Like, we get it. We're not dumb as an audience. We don't need to be shown the same chair a million times or the same doorway a million times. We don't need all of these things. It just lengthens out the movie. It removes the tension. And it's completely unnecessary. And have your characters, like, have character. It doesn't have to be much character, but it has to be a little bit of character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was just a slow, boring movie.
It should have been a short story or a short film without voiceover, with interactions between characters, and tried not to be so much an artistic masterpiece that not even critics or audiences enjoy. No, seriously, though. The Rotten Tomatoes score, looked it up, and it was like in the 50s for the critic score and in the 20s for the audience score. And critics usually like the artsy stuff. And they didn't. So.
That should say something.
At least 50% of them didn't. I am the pretty thing that lives in the house.
That's a long title.
It's a very long title. I am the pretty thing that lives in the house. Yes. It is...
Could have used a subtitle on that.
Yeah. It is marketed as a horror film. Was it psychological thriller, or was that one of the other ones that we were thinking of watching?
It was marked as like a straight up horror.
Okay, it was marked up as a straight-up horror, and I don't know what other... Film noir. I don't know. What's film noir? Would it have fit better than that? Gothic horror?
I'd say gothic horror. That's not film noir.
No, it's not film noir.
That's not film noir at all. Number one, it doesn't follow the film noir tropes.
It tries not to follow any tropes.
Which, yay for originality, but their tropes...
Except for the fact that a woman is murdered for no reason by her husband.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a trope.
Yeah.
Yep. And she's put in the walls. That's another trope.
Mm-hmm.
And the house is haunted. I guess that's a whole trope.
Yeah.
And the house is a character in and of itself is a trope.
Mm-hmm. Creepy old lady.
Creepy old lady is a trope. I guess it's full of tropes.
It was okay. But it just, there was no tension. And I guess if you like that type of stuff, that's cool. You know, all film is subjective, but it was just too boring for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Hopefully we have a better thing to introduce you to next time.
Yeah. All right.
This is Ellie.
This is Noakes.
Signing out.